You can't do a Jerry Seinfeld?
I really can't.
I mean, the only way to really do a Jerry Seinfeld is to, like, really turn the absurdity level.
Oh, you yeah. Throw that I just can't do...
What's the deal?
What's know, like, the deal?
What's the deal?
No, not too much.
Welcome to the podcast where your hosts sample a different scotch each season while we dive into current social, political, and economic issues each episode. This is Scotch and Socialism.
All right, welcome to today's episode for whatever day you are listening to this on. I'm Griff, your resident skeptic for the evening.
I am Jacob, your resident religious fanatic for the evening.
What the hell does that have to do with the minimum wage?
What the hell does skeptic have to do with the minimum wage?
Skepticism can be applied to anything. You are hardly a fanatic.
No, I'm not. But I guess our listeners don't know me well enough to actually know that, so maybe I should choose something else.
I'm kidding.
And I'm Russ, your resident lost in the weeds, because I have no idea what the hell's going on right now.
I don't know how we want to roll into this. We're still drinking Ainslie Bray as this season's scotch. It's actually quite affordable. I picked up a bottle here in Washington State. If you're listening to this in Washington, you can get a bottle of Ainslie Bray for about $25. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't taste like $25 dumpster water either.
It's a lot better actually, than that.
Yeah, it's quite delightful.
Well, and considering our liquor tax here is the highest in the nation,
I think. One of the highest in the nation. Yeah. I don't know if it's the highest because, you know, fluctuate, but it's pretty high.
Yeah, it's pretty solid.
Speaking of highest things in the nation, Washington has one of the highest minimum wages. Segway in the nation.
Washington or subsections of Washington?
I think Washington has the highest percentage above the national minimum wage, the Fair. Federal minimum wage.
Fair. Right.
So, statewide, I think ours is like 1350, 1390. Yeah. It's pretty high. And that's our topic tonight, is just the minimum wage, period. Is it good? Is it bad? Do we know?
Why does it exist?
Why are we
assigning morality to it?
Oh God.
Because we're human and we have to.
Everything's a moralistic question.
Yeah.
And that's another episode. but I mean, there's voices on all sides of this.
That's true.
All right. Well, I got a question for you. What is the minimum wage and why are we talking about it?
What is it as far as the dollar amount, or what is it in concept?
Context.
We'll get to that in a minute. But first, we got to give a shout out to a follower we have on Instagram. I think it's the Gen Z Gentleman.
That's right.
Is the name of the account. Kind of a lifestyle type presence. Does a lot of reviews of like some fine spirits. I think even some cigars and things like that. They wrote a really cool blog post and gave us a shout out. So return the favor. If you're on Instagram, check out the Gen Z Gentleman.
We'll talk about him a little bit more later in this podcast. Yeah.
If you're out there listening, hit us up. Anyway, back to the topic for us.
Lost. Totally lost.
I don't use Instagram, so I wouldn't know how these things work. That's for the youth.
Post it on our Instagram, the board thing, and then Google it or something.
Okay, Grandma.
I unfriend you.
I love that commercial. That's
great.
Fantastic commercial.
That's going to be us in like 2080.
It's already me. I hate social media in general. Anyways, back to the topic at hand. The minimum wage.
So the minimum wage, for anybody who doesn't know, is...
Are we talking... No, let's clarify. Are we talking the actual dollar amount or are we talking concept?
Well, I was going to get into that.
Go ahead.
Basically the minimum amount that your employer can pay you per hour. Now, a lot of companies, and especially in the service industry, can mess around with this by, like, I know a lot of states, I don't think Washington's one of them, but they can say, oh, you made tips, so your tips count towards your wage. And so they could actually pay you under that amount, as long as your tips cover it, that sort of a thing.
I've got friends in other states who are, like, bartenders, and their hourly wage is like $3.
Yeah.
But they can, you know, hack it on tips mostly.
Right.
So it's tricky.
Yeah. Well,
and from what I know, if their tips don't cover up to minimum, they do get paid minimum, right?
They're required to, yeah. I've heard some sketchy stories of like...
I'm sure there's some interesting stuff out there.
Yeah.
Unscrupulous bar managers.
Oh, I couldn't imagine.
Actually, one of the reasons I actually always tip, especially waitresses, waiters, you know, bar staff, that kind of stuff, because I know that they are probably not making what they should.
That, or especially like, you know, my local pho place, I always tip really good.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Tipping culture is weird and interesting and definitely something maybe we should get into another episode.
We're one of the only countries that tips.
That's true.
That's weird. It's because other countries have a sustainable minimum wage. Anyway.
How about that? Well, mostly.
Well.
But anyways. So minimum wage across the U.S. as of today is $7.25 an hour.
Federal minimum wage, $7.25.
Mm-hmm. And the recent COVID bill, which just got passed, was originally going to include a push to the $15 federal minimum wage, and that got taken out. Mm-hmm. Politics aside, kind of what are you guys surprised by that? This has been kind of like in the national conversation for a while now. I mean, minimum wage is always kind of in the national conversation, but this specific hike being tied to the bill was pretty big.
It's definitely not expected. I mean, I didn't realize it was even part of it until recently.
Sure.
Kind of thing.
Like, so you heard it was removed from the bill?
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. I mean, it was one of those things where like, oh, they're obviously working on the back end for this, but sure. Oh, they're tying it to the COVID bill. Why? I mean, obviously the COVID bill is going to get passed, so it'll get a rider, much like a lot of other weird stuff that gets passed that way. Them pulling it out, I believe, was a tactic to actually pass the bill without support from the other side, right?
I wouldn't be surprised.
If memory serves, and listeners, please correct us if I am wrong, there was actually an issue with some of the more, I think they call themselves centrist Democrats, where they didn't want to push.
Steve Manchin.
Yeah. They didn't want to push anything too controversial in the bill.
Controversial. Fair. Right. Well, and being here in Washington, it's interesting, right? Because we've had a $15 minimum wage in the Snohomish County, I believe.
King County. Yeah. The Seattle area.
I believe since 2018, 2017.
Yeah, it's been a while. It's been a while.
I think Tacoma was actually the first. I remember SeaTac, their employees had the 15 bump first, but I don't think that was like a county thing. I think that was actually just SeaTac.
Right, the city itself. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, across Washington State as a whole, the minimum is actually 12, which is lower than I thought. I thought it was higher. In Spokane County, or a municipality, I'm not sure, it is $13.69 per hour. And so that, to me, at least makes sense, at least as far as the Spokane thing goes, because we are actually rising in our cost of living here.
We are.
And the Seattle, like if I was to take a look at my Spokane wages and immediately transfer them over to Seattle, like that's a huge cut.
Absolutely. Well, and cost of living has to factor into this as well, right? Mm-hmm. The minimum wage is created at a federal level to make sure people aren't being taken advantage of effectively. Whereas a livable wage is much more interesting when you talk about it, right? Because a minimum wage may not be a livable wage depending on
where you are.
Bingo.
Well, and that's the thing is this $15 an hour push, some areas, even that won't be enough. Now, we're kind of opening a can of worms talking about this, but how much someone should, there it is, the worst word in the English language, someone should make relative to their needs is extremely tricky. And I think that's where it gets into a lot of controversy is because we, as a body politic, start getting into moralizing about, you know, they should do this, they shouldn't buy these things, should. Which is ironic because these are usually the same people that have pretty skeptical views of government overreach. But that's another topic. If you have places like Manhattan, 15 an hour is probably not going to cut it. 15 an hour probably wouldn't cut it here in Spokane if you wanted to live by yourself.
Yeah, that's one of the interesting things. Like for myself, much of my social media is very left liberal leaning sort of a thing. And so I've been seeing a lot more of this topic come up, especially because it's a huge thing in especially the Democratic platform. Mm-hmm. And the further left you go, it gets to be a larger and larger thing. And one of the, we briefly touched on this idea of like, there's this myth that's floating around there that says the minimum wage was never supposed to be a living wage. That's just factually wrong. Like when the minimum wage, I think it was called the Fair Wages Act, Fair Labor Standards Act, in 1938, it was explicitly called out as that's supposed to be more than bare subsistence, more than just a living wage even.
Really?
Yes. Now back then the minimum wage was 25 cents an hour.
That was back in,
but that was back in the '30s. In the late '30s. And so like even from day one, from a purely legal standpoint, it was meant to be a living wage.
That's interesting.
Mm-hmm. But that's not the,
see, I didn't even know about that. Right?
And it's not really the story that we're told, at least in the more conservative areas such as we live.
Not to clarify, not to take shots.
No, conservative
brethren, of course, but yeah, that is typically the line of reasoning.
Right.
One thing that's interesting, and I found this out doing some research today before this, is that across the board, the consensus is that the minimum wage is too low.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the disagreement comes, of course, in how much it should be. Again, like Jake was mentioning, the further left you go, the more percentage point of approval you get for a $15 an hour minimum wage. I think the article I saw, we can link some of these articles as well, was that even like 76% of Republicans polled in this said that the $7.25 is too low, which is kind of interesting. And of course, 92% of Democrats polled said it should be 15. So it's not really surprising how it breaks down along party lines that way. But just the fact that a higher minimum wage in some aspect is getting relatively strong bipartisan support, kind of interesting, because it's been such a dividing wedge in a lot of ways for so long.
Agreed. So what are some of the ramifications of increasing the minimum wage? I mean, we all think that it should be increased. That should help the more impoverished people who are working minimum wage jobs effectively to elevate themselves in a financial status, right? The interesting thing, especially being a small business owner, is I'm looking at it a little bit differently, right? I'm looking at it as an expense. I can hire someone right now in the area for $13.50, something like that. Mm-hmm. That's not terrible, but that is a chunk of my profits that go out the door, which if I have enough business, sure, that makes sense. If we arbitrarily increase it to a number, 15 isn't bad for us, right? $2 more, not the end of the world. But if we're looking at some place that's currently paying 7.5, moving it to 15, that's twice, right? That's astronomical. And having to suddenly take on, let's say you had one employee, you're doubling their salary, guaranteed.
Yep.
There's a very good chance that one of two things is going to happen. That business is either going to let them go because they're too expensive, or they're going to cut their hours in half and make them work probably just as hard in half the amount of time.
Right.
And so there's not always good things that are going to come out, mm-hmm. going to come out of this.
Yeah. And I think that's one of the points. Like I tend to be more liberal leaning when it comes to economics, things like that. But that's one of the points that the left really does often miss out on, is like, yeah, in the grand scheme of things, and I suppose I should frame their argument this way. In the grand scheme of things, when you raise the minimum wage, by and large, employment as a whole, if you're looking at it at a large section, stays roughly the same, if not goes up. And they've done a few of these studies like in New York and things like that years ago, back when the minimum wage over there was like five something.
I think I read about that. There was a study done across 400 fast food restaurants in the New Jersey, Pennsylvania area.
Yeah.
Because New Jersey, I think, bumped its minimum wage from $4.50 to like over $5. It was early 90s, so, account for inflation. And they did not find any statistically significant variation mm-hmm. in level of employment.
Right. But that doesn't mean that individual people didn't lose their jobs.
Absolutely.
And I think that's something that like we always have to keep in mind, is people are going to be affected by this negatively.
Yeah.
And it might not be permanent, mm-hmm. but it could cause lasting and severe damage. I think we talked about this in what may be our bonus episode. but people who are at an economic disadvantage, it's much harder for them to, quote unquote, pull themselves up by their own bootstraps.
Ding, 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 ding. Sorry. We need a bell.
We need an actual cowbell for that.
Oh boy.
Yeah.
For the big platitude. Government shilling.
No, for the platitude fowls.
Oh, the platitude.
Anyway.
Bell.
Platitude bell. I like that.
I like it. But it's harder for people who are at an economic disadvantage to get further ahead than it is for somebody who's already started out ahead.
Well, absolutely.
And yeah. So yeah. When you were talking about raising these minimum wages, well, I think overall, as for the economy, it's going to be a good thing. And overall, not just for the economy, but for people, it will be a good thing. But we have to deal with what that fallout is going to be. Because you're right. Small businesses, there's going to be a number of small businesses that are going to take this hit very hard. Now, I think that there's a little bit more hyperbole than a lot of these places make it out to be. Then again, I'm saying that from a position of relative ease. I work for a massive corporation doing engineering in a field that pays lucratively as it stands.
Do you guys employ anyone who's at minimum wage that you're aware of?
Yes, I know that. So my company, we do the manufacturing, or at least chunks of the manufacturing. And I'm pretty sure our factory floor, they make close to minimum wage. They might make something higher, although I do remember a striking point where we had an all-hands meeting and somebody from the factory floor stood up and said, "Hey, thank you so much for our 25 cent an hour increase."
That almost sounds like a dig.
They were being serious from what I could tell. Grant, somebody from outside of the state, so it's a little hard for me to read tone sometimes.
Sure. Well, and that's the fun thing, right? Like, it could be either side. It could be a completely facetious statement, or it could be a genuine statement.
Yeah.
And, you know, who knows which side it actually fell on.
But this was also in the Bay. Mm. And, like, if you're making minimum wage in the Bay, oof. I saw postings at some local restaurants for, like, dishwashers to make $18 an hour.
Yeah. Well, and that's kind of what I'm wondering. It, cost of living areas that are increased like that, mm-hmm. you're probably going to see more people who are already above minimum wage, even if they were to increase it to 15. Right. So there's really no effect in those areas.
Right.
You know, like, the vendors don't have to worry about it. The actual employees aren't getting a benefit from it either.
Right.
I'm more concerned about the lower cost of living areas mm-hmm. that to them, sustainability is that $8 an hour that they're paying their employees.
Right.
And if they were to increase to 15, their revenue may not handle that.
Right. And so that's where, like, my views on the whole minimum wage increase do certainly get a little bit more nuanced. Like, we absolutely have to take cost of living into account. We can't use that as an excuse to not raise things.
Oh, no, absolutely.
Right? But
it's something to consider.
Right. And just taking yours as the opposite point, like, raising it to 15 in the Bay is not going to do a whole lot, where we have people who are, you know, they're making what would be great money in Spokane, but they're absolutely impoverished in the Bay. They're absolutely below the poverty line in the Bay.
Counter that with raising it to 15 in somewhere like Wetumpka, Alabama.
Right.
Which is actually a place.
Population 300?
No, I think it's over 1,000.
Okay.
I think. It would be huge. It would be an absolute boon for that
for
area.
The employees.
Who could afford the economy there? That's the question. I mean, that's always the question. And that's why one of the things the research really, really highlights, as this is more nuanced than we think, is geographic. Mm-hmm. Because if you compare San Jose to Wetumpka, night and day, you know, totally different worlds, totally different expense profiles. But that's why that study we referenced earlier, Pennsylvania, New Jersey, they're very close. They're, you know, within, you know, 30 minutes of each other where mm-hmm. it was. So physical location plays a pretty big part of this, just because of how much the physical location influences the economy.
Right. Oh, absolutely. I think so.
But that's also why it probably shouldn't be a federal minimum wage. I mean, federal minimum wage is really there to protect people. Again, it's not a livable wage. The livable wage needs to be dictated by the area you live in. Therefore, mm-hmm. a livable wage, right?
Right. And so maybe not necessarily a federal hard number minimum wage, but maybe something from the Fed that's more like, here's what, you know, taking into account rent and cost of milk.
Well,
and
we have a fantastic system for that for the most part, right? Mm-hmm. We have the per diem charts. When I'm traveling for business, it takes into account the area that I'm in, the state that I'm in. It basically accounts for cost of living in that area.
Right.
And if I travel to Seattle, I don't know what it is currently, but last time I traveled to Seattle for business, it was $77 a day. Mm-hmm. It's fantastic. Here in Spokane at the time, it was $45 a day. There's a discrepancy there, but it's accurate, or at least decently accurate, right? It's a lot better than saying, well, $15 here is $15 there.
No. Nope.
It's not going to be like San Jose 15, like, and I think all about the, it's all about the metrics that you use too, absolutely. Right? Because San Jose, a gallon of milk wasn't that much more than it is here. But
I'm not sure what the per diem charts work off of as far as that's concerned.
Oh, sure. Yeah. But something to that effect is like, we have the ability to make this calculation more nuanced and make it more fair to economies.
So setting a base and then saying, you know, in a large metropolitan area like San Jose, maybe it's a 0.9x increase, mm-hmm. you know, something. Whereas if you're in, what was the name of that town?
Wetumpka.
Sorry. I'm from Kendrick, Idaho. I don't speak well.
Although you grammar very nicely.
Some days. But living there, maybe it's a detractor. Maybe it's 15 with a less of 0.5, mm-hmm. you know, some kind of a multiplier there. And that might be a very simple and easy way to handle that. Now, obviously, we're not writing any of this politician, you know, stuff. This is all speculation and enjoyment out here. But it is interesting that we have such a global system for such a dynamic and not static kind of system that exists across the entire U.S.
Right.
I think there used to be some incentive, and I don't know what form it would take, that incentivizes states to set minimum wages based on the needs of that state.
But even states also can be highly diversified.
Well, look at Washington, you know, or look at Alabama, Huntsville, Alabama, big metropolitan area is going to be way more expensive than Wetumpka. Georgia is another great example because Atlanta is almost as expensive as Spokane, but it's the only like kind of big.
It is the high end.
Yeah, it is the top end. So, even regional. But that may end up causing more problems too, because if you've got, oh, well over in, you know, this town or this county, the wages are higher, you're going to have an influx of people.
Well, I have a great story for that. So LC Valley, for you guys aren't familiar, Lewis Clark Valley, Lewiston Clarkston, down half in Idaho, half in Washington.
Yeah.
Fantastic little thing. But there is a disparity between Idaho and Washington minimum wage. Very much so. The difference at the time, I believe, was something $6 an hour for Idaho. And $12 an hour for Washington.
Wow.
Really bad, right? Well, you've got students down there from Lewis Clark State College. You've got students down there from U of I, potentially. Moscow Pullman, I'm sure, had this exact same problem. But you get these corporations that exist on both sides.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not going to name any names, but let's say some random fast food restaurant that does roast beef sandwiches. Oddly specific.
Shape of a hat somewhere?
Somewhere. Is that what that is? Yeah. If you're not, never mind. The students that would work there and some of my friends who worked there would opt for the Washington side shifts because they got shifted around to anyone that was in the area and anyone within like a 5-mile radius. So there was like six different shops. Three of them were in Washington. Three of them were in Idaho. Where does everyone want to work?
Washington.
Mm-hmm. Because if they work in Idaho, they get paid minimum wage regardless of where they are. So there were fights over scheduling.
I believe that.
There was huge uproar and people who couldn't maintain their Washington roles. Like some people had seniority, like, well, I have seniority, so I get to work in Washington. And then you get, you know, some people that come in, well, no, it needs to be fair, so we're going to put you in Idaho today. Well, fine, then I quit. Mm-hmm. That happens. The turnover was insane because of that. And so it causes a really interesting turmoil. And that's just because it's on the state line, right? I expect that the same thing would happen if you started doing counties, something the same way, where there's one county right next to another one where, you know, maybe it's a smaller town that only pays $12 an hour and the big city that's only like a half hour away that pays 15. You know, it's like, well, where do I want to work? Well, I want to work over there and it's within my driving range, it's within my abilities. Why can't I work over there?
Right.
Well, because the corporation says you work wherever we tell you to work.
Right. Have we just stumbled on the reason and the logic behind the federal minimum wage?
Potentially, but it's never kept up. And that's the thing is the minimum wage, again, is not a livable wage, according to, you know, most people.
I think what was interesting is, I think this was the last time it was raised, or at least the last time it was significantly raised. It was in 2009. And it's interesting because that was in like the throes of the Great Recession.
We had a recession in 2009. We had a recession in 2008.
But it was still, I mean,
it was still, like, going, it was still
falling. It was still going on.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, the recession started in September of 2008.
Yeah.
So it, by 2009,
that's true.
It was still a thing.
It was still a thing. No, I was like, I didn't remember one starting in 2009. I'm like, wait, I know there was an issue there, but I was thinking of the one that started
right,
in 2008.
Right. Well, I bring that up because, you know, this coronavirus pandemic and subsequent economic shutdown, you know, was kind of doom and gloom. Oh, it's going to be as bad as, or it's going to be worse than the recession of 2008. It's going to be as bad, blah, blah, blah. I don't actually know what the metrics are. I don't know what the numbers say. I would imagine it's worse in some ways, not as bad in others. But we were still able to pass a boosted minimum wage during the great recession. Mm-hmm. Now, I didn't have enough time, and this is the graduate student in me shaking their head in shame. I didn't have time to research what, if any, of those effects might be historically from a minimum wage hike in 2009.
I was going to say, did it stabilize the economy? Did it help the economy?
That's the question.
We don't know.
See, and that's the question that we really, it deserves reframing now. Mm-hmm. Is when we've got so many businesses that were shuttered or were put on hiatus or whatever you want to call it, is it going to have the kind of 1-2 punch effect of like, hey, you can only operate at 25% capacity and now you have to pay your employees $15 an hour?
Yep. Oh, it's a death knell for some people, some groups. It's one of those things where I know a couple of businesses that aren't even opening because they can't do 25% capacity. They can't keep a single staff member
and do that.
In the building just for 25%. Mm-hmm. And so they have opted to continue doing just takeout because it's more feasible for them.
Right.
And yeah, I absolutely agree. If they were to increase the minimum wage, especially around here, you're going to see that, you know, $3 increase minimum. And it's going to cause some problems, especially now.
I think you would see places that are close to shuttering now probably would.
Yep.
Probably sure. would. That would be the push. Now, I don't think it's going to be a sweeping just apocalypse small businesses.
But it is going to be the ones that are teetering on the edge are going to get shoved off.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, also, like, had it have gone into that bill, it wouldn't have been effective right away.
I don't know what the rollout was.
I need to look this up, and maybe I'll do a quick edit in the podcast, but it was going to be at least a year. $15 minimum wage to take place. Smash edit here. Yeah, the minimum wage would not have been raised to $15 an hour until 2025. It was like a deadline. Like
yeah, you would have to roll. Had to do you that. Would have to roll into
it was,
something
and
like
I,
that.
I want to say it was longer than a year. I think it was.
It could be.
Yeah,
I know so, the rollout
like,
here.
Like theoretically, we would have been out of this issue of like you. Or only at 25% capacity, that sort of thing.
You would hope.
Yeah, God willing, please.
don't jinx it.
But like it's not going to take away all of the issue or concern, but it would theoretically not compound everything.
Absolutely. If we were back to normal economic status and then have it happened, it could actually very well be a boon. It could be absolutely amazing for the area. And it could be very helpful to especially those who had lost their jobs previously, now walking back into a workforce that is providing better for them.
Well, and that's the flip side to the kind of pivot point that is the minimum wage is, well, you're going to lose jobs. You might, but the jobs you keep, those people will now be making more money.
Right.
And people who are at the lower end of the socioeconomic spectrum spend their money more than people who are at the higher end.
Which creates more jobs.
Exactly. Nick Hanauer is a venture capitalist in Seattle, one of the first guys to jump on the Amazon bus, has been a huge proponent of higher minimum wage for a long time. And he makes the point of, look, I'm a billionaire. I can't buy, you know, 1,000 cars. I mean, maybe technically he could, but
from the money standpoint, sure.
From the money standpoint, yes, the money is there. But from the personal, am I going to do this standpoint? No, it's not. Mm-hmm. You know, he can only have so many yachts and so many pairs of shoes and things like that. And he said, when working class people have money in their hands, they spend it on things that are essential, food, utilities,
oh,
groceries, mm-hmm. and these are the kinds of things that end up, you know, generating revenue for businesses across the board.
It reinvigorates the economy. That's the point, right? Unfortunately, when we get raises, because we're above poverty line, we're above minimum wage. When we get raises, we either invest it, we
save it.
We we don't inject it back into the economy that much. I mean, we go buy frivolous stuff once in a while.
Right.
But generally, we're not the ones who are going to be pumping all of it back into the economy. And that's where I think the stimulus checks are very useful in that regard.
Oh, yeah. I'm super happy that I'm not receiving a stimulus check.
Absolutely.
I don't need it. Like, and I'm incredibly blessed to be in this place that I don't have to worry about it. But like, if my cohort were gaining these checks, I know for one, oh yeah, hell yeah, I'm throwing that into my Fidelity account. Mm-hmm. Gonna watch that thing rise. Now that brings up an interesting question of like why we invest it. Because you know, sure, because we can, but also like our country's retirement isn't great. We've got Social Security, which effectively pays beans. And so most of us need to save for retirement on our own through our own means. And that's paints a very bleak picture for people on the lower end of the economic spectrum.
If you're making minimum wage, you're generally not saving for retirement in any way, shape, or form.
Well, I mean, and I just did some quick back of the hand math. And so if we were to raise the minimum wage to $15 an hour, that translates to roughly $1,700 a month before taxes are taken out.
True.
That was after taxes were taken out. In Spokane, an average one-bed apartment, an average one-bed apartment was going for, I think, $800 a month.
That's depending on which financial advice you follow, a third to half of your income is going to be spent on housing.
It's pretty okay, yeah. That would be at the $15.
Absolutely.
Minimum wage.
Absolutely.
And so even Spokane, we're at 13 something. It's not terribly bad, but for some of these areas that have
If you compare that to Seattle, greater metropolitan area, right? You're going to find an average one bedroom for probably 15 to 1800.
Yeah.
And minimum wage of 15 at that point is your entire paycheck for the month. Mm-hmm. That's a problem.
You have a roommate.
Yeah, well, exactly.
You get roommates.
It's like, and so there's that balance of like, you know, what is a living wage? Like for me, being a young bachelor,
moving to an area that is incredibly cheap.
The town's most eligible bachelor.
Hey, you know.
Hit him up. His number is.
Oh, God. Why'd the audio cut out?
But, you know, like me, young, single, no kids, I can live with a roommate. I did in San Jose because I was, you know, I was working as an engineer and still had to have a roommate in order to be able to save money.
It means you're criminally underpaid.
Yeah. But that's fine. However, how much or like what is the general age range that people are and still making the minimum wage?
Well, that's the thing, right? It depends.
I think it skews towards, I don't want to say the extremes.
Mid-30s.
Really?
Really?
All the way up into your mid-30s that we're seeing a ton of people.
You know, what's fun about that is if you look at the correlation between people living at home, it has increased severely. Mm-hmm. When I moved out back in the early 2000s, it was an average of 24-year-olds living at home before they moved out. That number has gone up a lot.
Yep.
Like we're into low 30s at this point. The people are still living at home with their parents, making minimum wage, interestingly enough. And that's a problem.
Yeah. Now, a lot of the times, you know, the argument against this is go to college, which we covered in our last episode, or go work a trade. It's not that simple. Like, especially if we're talking about economically disadvantaged folks, sometimes you're providing not just for yourself, but for your parents, one of whom may not be able to work at all, or for a family or whatever. And so it's not as simple as going out to getting a new job because you have to maintain your current level of income, plus go to school and pay for that school, plus potentially be taking care of at least one other person. And so when you're doing that for minimum wage, that's freaking tough.
The interesting thing about single life is that you can survive a lot easier.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's no requirement, right? If I lose my job tomorrow and I have no income, I've got a handful of friends that I can go couch surf and no one's going to care for the most part. Mm-hmm. I'm going to show up and be like, hey man, I need your couch. They'll be like, sure. How long do you need? Not a big deal. Now I have a friend of mine who has a family. He has a wife, two kids. If he were to lose his job tomorrow and had no income and had no money to jump back on, which he does a good job of saving. The issue is he's not going to drag his wife and two kids to anyone's house. That's not happening. Mm-hmm. You know, suddenly you are providing for other people, and unfortunately, you cannot put that burden on other people.
Right.
As friendly as people would like to be, sure, you can stay the night, but you got to find someplace else by the end of the week. Like, this is not going to be a permanent thing. Yeah. As a single person, the couch is mine. You know,
much easier,
much easier. Yeah. And I find that that's a really interesting dichotomy, mm-hmm. because you have a single family where you have maybe mom stays home, maybe dad stays home with the kids. You have one single earner for the family, mm-hmm. who might be making minimum wage because, you know, whatever circumstance, but trying to support that group. And if they were to suddenly lose that job, mm-hmm. that would be detrimental to that family unit.
Devastating. Yeah. Well, and then I already hear certain counter arguments floating in the back of my head because I'm not looking at you specifically. Calm down. But you know, I having had this conversation with a broad spectrum of views on the economy, I can always hear one of the counter arguments of being like, well, you shouldn't have gone out and had a family. Like, mm-hmm. I'm sorry, what?
Yeah. I mean, 50-50, right? There's a level of, I learned this in health class, when you insert tab B into slot A or slot A into tab B, you know, it's one of those things you've learned that this happens, right?
Sure.
And to be fair, it's fine. If you want to have a family and that's what your goal in life is, great. If it happens accidentally, that's not necessarily a bad thing, but make sure you provide. Make sure you take the effort, right, and the motivation to provide for that family.
Right. But, but you might be at a point. Tricky
is, actually, go ahead, finish your thought. I think we're going to say the same thing.
Probably, yeah. I think, like, you might be at a point where, you know, you have a family, and whether or not it's by accident, and you find yourself economically disadvantaged. Either you were already in that position before, or God forbid, your partner lost their job.
Yeah, or something happened, right? Because life happens.
Life does happen.
Life sucks sometimes. Mm-hmm. And to clarify, to have an accidental family.
the latest sitcom on NBC primetime.
Accidental family.
Yeah.
Yikes. But it might not be kids, right? It might be maybe your parents have picking up an illness. Maybe
that's very true.
Maybe there was an accident. Maybe there was some other issue that happened. You know, it may not just be, you know, you accidentally creating a family. It might be you inheriting one.
Yeah, absolutely.
Which could be a huge problem. And so it's
like care, not just stocking health care.
Oh, absolutely.
Care in general is very expensive. Either child care, daycare is insane. Like, talking with some of my friends who have kids, and both parents are professional earners. It's insane. And so sometimes it's honestly cheaper if one partner stays. Well,
effectively
home.
You're paying for it, right?
Yeah.
Like think about, especially if they're raising the minimum wage, right? Yep. So a great example, again, one of my friends, a single parent, has a kid, takes her to daycare, and I believe she was paying something in the range of $13 an hour. Not terrible, but not bad. The increase to minimum wage actually forced her to take her out of daycare because she could not maintain her job and still pay for daycare because she was only making minimum wage.
Mm-hmm.
And suddenly it just wasn't translating. There was no food on the table. What's interesting about that is she didn't qualify for any of the welfare or any of the support stuff because she made too much money.
Yep.
Now, if we're talking about increasing the minimum wage, I'm really curious to see how that would affect all benefits
of our other
for systems. Like we have other minimum requirements, right? Mm-hmm. And if you're making minimum wage, if you're making $12 an hour, you do not qualify for assistance from the state.
No.
Which is a huge issue because you'd be better off not working. And that's a bad thing. You know, mm-hmm. that starts a cycle of, well, if I would make more money not working,
yep.
Why am I working? Yes. Why am I busting my butt? Why am I spending my time trying to, you know, take my kid to the daycare, work my butt off, and then, you know, live when I could sit at home, you know, eat Funyuns, watch Price is Right, and I make more money.
Yeah. And it's that self-fulfilling prophecy of people who hate welfare or whatever. Well, yeah, where our welfare system is screwed up and our minimum wage and all of these other systems are screwed up enough to where it is easier.
Well, and none of them are in alignment with each other. That's the problem. Like, we don't consider the minimum welfare, you know, income requirements when we look at things like minimum wage increase, mm-hmm. where it basically would invalidate most people. If they're working for minimum wage, they don't get benefits, period. Like, end of story. And I haven't actually researched this, so throwing that out there for the listeners. To my knowledge, there is no bill that's waiting on the minimum wage increase to say, oh, by the way, the minimum wage increase will also increase welfare benefit minimum requirements.
That's true, because that's the bureaucratic side of the conversation. That's you can't put that on a poster board.
No.
You know,
way too complex.
I'm sure Bernie Sanders could.
Oh, yeah, Bernie Sanders could. But it doesn't make for good sound bites.
Also true. Also true. Mm-hmm. Well, and that's the thing too. It's going to be very interesting. I love it whenever there's a new thing like increase in minimum wage, right, in the news, because you get all these really interesting like media twisted titles that come out. God. It's like, you know, local family of four can't buy food anymore. It's like, well, they actually can. It's just, it's become difficult now. But I just love the twist that you know, the media puts on a lot of this. And it obviously depends on which way the media outlet's leaning most of the time, on whether it's a problem for the vendor or a problem with the user or the problem, you know, whichever side it lays. You know, sometimes it's the government's problem.
It's a problem with the user, but I'm coming from IT, so.
I know. And it's funny, right? Because I say vendor and user because those are the monikers I am so used to using when talking about the higher up establishment versus the person who's consuming the goods. The government, I consider the vendor, and I consider the standard, you know, person, the consumer.
Shout out in the comments if you know what a layer 8 issue is.
I don't want to think about that right now. Work ended.
But yeah, it's a sticky wicket.
You know, it's not a sticky wicket. Ainslie Bray, single malt Highland Scotch. It's delightful. I think it's time for a scotch break.
It's delightful. I think it is time for a scotch break. This is your regularly scheduled scotch break. So this is our official whiskey break.
He hasn't even had any yet. Folks.
I just can't talk. So like Griff said, we are drinking the Ainslie Bray Oak casks.
I did a little looking on the website today. They are very proud of their casking approaches. They have like four or five different casks different types of cask that they'll run their scotch through. This is a brand new bottle, as we were mentioning earlier. A lot of almost sweet notes in there.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very easy sipping scotch. There's almost no peat, so it almost tastes more like bourbon than scotch.
Yeah. Or an Irish whiskey, I would say.
Yeah, it's definitely on the milder end of the dark liquors mm-hmm. spectrum.
But that doesn't mean that it's not delightful.
It is quite delightful.
For a $25 bottle of scotch, highly
recommend.
Can't
go wrong with that. And because most single malts are 40, a good single malt scotch, mm-hmm. usually about 40 and up.
Yep.
If you're in Washington, just throw another zero on there. That approximates the tax you're going to pay.
Yeah. I mean, the Glenlivet 12-year, which is kind of bog standard scotch, is, I think it's 45.
Something like that.
Yeah.
If you know what it is, leave us a comment.
There we go.
Or send us a bottle.
So we also wanted to call out the Gen Z gentlemen. They gave us a shout out on Instagram, so we figured quick pro quo. And they have a really great few articles on their website. But the one that I wanted to briefly talk about is their article on scotch glasses. There's a lot of glasses out there for whiskeys in general, not just scotch. So one of the things that you'll see kind of floating around, you know, on the Pinterest, Instagram verse.
The world,
are these, they look like faceted glasses that kind of rest on their on their angle, I guess.
They rest at an angle.
It's really difficult to describe in an audio-only podcast. They look really cool. They fit in your hand well, and they're actually, because they're a little bit concave towards the top of the glass, they're going to give you a bit of a better nose than what Griff and I are actually drinking from, which would be pretty much your standard old-fashioned.
This is like a good old 70s... But this isn't a highball, though.
No, it's not a highball because it's actually convex at the end. Like an actual...
It's just a tumbler.
Yeah. An actual double old-fashioned glass would be just an exact straight up. And finally, I didn't know that that's what these are called, but you have the Glencairn glasses, which I always mistakenly called tulip glasses, but that's actually a beer thing. Tulip glass is actually going to be a lot wider, but the Glencairn is actually, it's the only glass endorsed by the Scotch Whiskey Association.
Oh, what? Why are we not using those?
Well, because
Russ provided these.
Yeah.
Because the non-drinker provided.
the yep, only guy in here who doesn't drink scotch gave us the glasses.
Well, it's his house.
Or it is his house, because I haven't gotten around to actually going out to buying the Glencairn glasses.
It sounds like it would be expensive.
Not necessarily. You can find them for fairly cheap. But this glass is specifically designed for the nose, so you can actually get all of the aromas that you're trying to get out of there, plus the drinkability. It's going to hit your palate in a pretty good place.
Are we talking about wine or scotch here? Jeez.
Yes. No. We're talking about scotch, but it's, you know, when you're talking about like truly tasting scotch.
Can you not say it so pompously?
That was, I think, the you wrong have to say it pompously. Okay. If you're talking about tasting like that.
Experiencing an expression.
Yeah.
Experience an expression.
That's what they call them, expressions.
Expressions.
It's an expression. That's what they call, like, you know how we have makes and models of car, Chevy Corvette? They have expressions of, it could be scotch, bourbon, whiskey, whatever, of a spirit. So, it produces this expression, which is what we're having tonight. It's weird. Read that in my scotch book.
The Gen Z gentleman says that he doesn't like the appearance of the Glencairn glasses. I always thought that they were rather fancy. So he gave it a 3.5 out of 5 for the appearance. I'd say it's like at least a 4, depending on what we're
getting. I don't rank things by number, Jake.
By letters, then?
I don't rank things. The human experience is much too multifaceted to be shoehorned into something as crass as numbers and letters.
Where's our rhetorician cowbell?
That's right. We need the grad school cowbell. Ding, 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 ding. Yeah, sorry.
The Gen Z gentleman, go check him out on Instagram. His website on Instagram, thegenzgentleman.com, G-E-N-Z.
You don't have to spell gentleman. I think people know how to spell gentleman.
I hope so.
Anyway, back to your regularly scheduled programming.
Our initial topic on the minimum wage. So, what are some of the other things that you guys have heard about the minimum wage increase? Because it's been going on for a while. I think the argument that I always heard the most against raising the minimum wage was mostly, well, you know, if we raise the minimum wage, everybody would want to be working at McDonald's instead of being, and we should be paying our firefighters more than people at McDonald's. Like, sure,
we should.
Why not both?
That's such a ham-fisted narrative. Mm-hmm. because it bulldozes any element of individual humanity, and that sounds drastic, I'll grant, but what they're basically saying is, what that narrative is saying is that people shouldn't want to work these jobs. So in a way, we want to disincentivize them by paying them only the bare minimum. Mm-hmm. Maybe I'm reading too much into that, but
I don't know. It doesn't sound that far off.
Does that sound,
sadly, right?
How far does that sound, that far off of where that thread goes?
To me, it doesn't. And I think this goes back to my whole, like, your worth is not defined by where you are working.
Right.
Just like we talked about in our conversation on education. And so there is that level of, like, you know what, maybe somebody's doing that job so that they can focus their efforts on other things.
Maybe they're going to school and, you know, working a shift at McDonald's is what's in their town.
Yeah.
And it's what works around their schedule.
Yeah. And maybe they, like, this whole idea of, like, disincentivizing people working these fast food jobs or whatever doesn't take into account many people. In fact, most people who I met in the fast food industry when I was working through there, who were getting some form of education or had people in their lives that they were taking care of and couldn't go and get a different education, whether it was university, trade school, or whatever, and take care of their family at the same time.
Well, here's one of the things that really is problematic, is that when we're talking about people who, or when certain political leanings are talking about people who make minimum wage, it almost always comes back to fast food, you know, and mm-hmm. it's because it's an easy punching bag.
Sure.
There are
it's a large amount of people working in fast food, especially in America, right? I mean, if you look at the McDonald's and the Burger Kings and everything else, they're a huge in empire.
Service industries.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, it is huge. It's not the only one, though. No. There are a lot of other jobs out there that are not fast food and are not service industry that are still minimum wage, you know? And when I was selling cars, if you didn't make more than your minimum wage in commission, you're going to get your minimum wage, you know, as your paycheck.
Right.
So there are people who are working I hate to use it, but I'm going to kind of use it sarcastically here, burger flipper jobs that maybe they're in a career path or in a job that in, you know, the best of times would provide for a family or for sustainable life, but because of whatever reasons, sometimes beyond their control, it's just not working out that way, mm-hmm. you know? So when we try to shoehorn all minimum wage earners into the 15-year-old burger flipper, it falls apart really quick. The other thing too, is that there are, I think you're going to see this more talking about retirement. I think you're going to see more older people working or going back to work. Like I went to
I've seen a lot of retirees actually that end up going back to Walmart and
Dairy Queen.
I remember while I was working in fast food, you know, getting my college degree or whatever, I was a shift lead at the burger joint, and I had a woman who was roughly the same age as my grandparents, I think, who was under me. That was weird.
Yeah.
But again, it was one of those stories of like, well, I think she, for her, as it was more of just like, she just needed something to do.
Oh, absolutely.
Sort of a thing, which is great. Awesome. Go do it. But for a lot of people, like if they weren't able to save for retirement or perhaps didn't make the best financial decisions.
Or had other inclement issues, right?
Sure.
Because things happen.
Yeah, exactly.
That opens another topic we should touch on too.
You're going to start seeing more and more people, like Griff said, in the higher age range in these lower paying unskilled jobs.
Especially when ageism and hiring is such a thing. And that's another topic for a whole other podcast, is how hard it is for people who are aging out, quote unquote, of the workforce to find jobs. And, you know, hiring managers will look at people sideways and like, oh, our typical applicant's like 30 and you're like 55. Like what's wrong with you?
And they look, of course, never submit a full resume to one of those jobs, dear Lord. They will discriminate based on the fact that you actually have a work history, which is weird.
In some places,
It's one of those things where I've had a couple of friends who kind of, not necessarily retired, but they were looking for a different pace of life.
Sure.
Is a good way to put it. And they did apply to some of the more fast food-esque, restaurant-esque kind of things where they were looking for just something non-committal where they could leave at 5 o'clock and not care, you know, end of shift and just not have any responsibilities.
Honestly, if I was like fabulously wealthy, if I was screw you wealthy, I would probably go back to washing cars.
Yeah.
Cause I just like doing it.
Well, it's kind of zen sometimes too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And you know, there's no expectation that you got to put in the extra hours to hit the number at the quarter or whatever.
Yeah.
You guys ever watched American Beauty? Fantastic little movie
I
think late 90s maybe.
I watched it, started falling asleep.
Sad.
Kevin Spacey, right?
Yeah, Kevin Spacey.
You got to be careful with that now.
Yeah, well, that's another issue. But really interesting take. I mean, the movie itself is weird as hell, but interesting take because he goes back to work just a standard, I want to work here because I don't want to have to think. Mm-hmm. I'm done thinking. And it was interesting because they did discriminate based on the fact, like, well, you have a career path. Like, you've done this, like, sales for 20 years. Why do you want to work here? And it was an interesting conversation because as I was younger at the time when I watched it, and I was going, why would a person who's making money want to go back and make less money and like basically restart his career path or just kill off the career path? Mm-hmm, I didn't understand that. I do now.
Yeah.
You know, I have now been in my field for 20 years. I have recently discovered in the last year, I semi-retired, if that's even an option. I decided to remove myself from a job that was basically sucking the life out of me and wasn't expecting to pick up another job. I happened to a year later when I was approached by a couple of my friends and they said, hey, you should check out this one. I'm like, sure, whatever. I had no intention of actually working, but they pulled me back in because it's something to do. It's actually something that I really enjoy as a career path. And it's not just because I'm getting a paycheck. The funny part about this is initially I didn't even know what I got paid. Like I signed on the dotted line without a check.
See, I'm curious what longer term implications this is going to have, because our generation, and I'm looping all three of us into this, even though we're the same generation. Yeah, enough.
We got babyface Jake over here in the corner.
That's true.
And we have the elder millennial over there on the opposite side of me.
Don't talk to Griff that way.
I was wondering where I was going to plop down into this thing. Our generation, despite all narrative to the contrary, really does have a pretty intense work ethic.
Oh, tremendously.
I mean, look at side hustles, gigs, this and that, the other. I was even thinking about it the other day. It's like, oh, geez, I'm going to be bored retiring, you know, because you think of,
absolutely,
you think of like kind of that, you know, Leave It to Beaver American dream of like, oh, retire to Florida and just spend your days on the beach and playing
read your newspaper board, in the morning,
read
and
your newspaper,
have your coffee and
have watch dinner TV, at 3:50, you know, have dinner at, yeah.
I'd lose my jinkies.
Oh my God. Yes.
I would die or kill someone.
Yeah.
And
just for the excitement.
Yeah. It's just either of those. And I wonder how our generation will age to the point where we're retiring. Cause we're at the point where a lot of our friends and compatriots, I guess, are having kids. Like, all right, well, that's milestone two,
right,
after getting married. Sometimes they
put, we need to talk about that too. The Norman Rockwell, you know, progression of life.
Yes.
Suburbia, this hell.
And that's a really valid point.
It's one of those things where we'll have to cover in another episode, I'm sure. But the whole like American dream and how it's shifted,
mm-hmm,
it's no longer, you know, get a job, get a wife, have a kid, 2.5 kids, whatever the average is these days.
Dog, picket fence.
Yeah, dog, picket fence.
Retired 60, live in Boca.
Well, exactly. That's not what our generation, no. I don't even think that's what the generation above us.
Most of us, it's beyond a dream to own a house.
And this is what's interesting is that dream, the Leave It to Beaver. We're all familiar with Leave It to Beaver.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we kind of are on the edge of that, by the way. I'd be questionable.
Well, you didn't have TV Land. You have TV Land. You have YouTube.
Sure.
There's no excuse for not knowing.
My upbringing had a decent amount of older TV.
We have this narrative in our minds. Narrative's going to be our cuss word jar thing. Gosh. We have this image, collective zeitgeist image of
that. You need to stop saying that too. That was like six times in the first episode.
Zeitgeist?
Yeah.
I did not say zeitgeist.
Oh, okay. Somebody said it way too many times.
It's a great word. Wasn't me.
It is. It's a fantastic word. No one knows what it means. It's fantastic.
Spirit of the time.
It is.
It's German for time ghost. Seriously.
Yep.
Leave it to the Germans.
Anyways.
It's true.
Speaking of minimum wages, they actually have a minimum wage now. Rolled that out in 2015.
Recently. Interesting.
It is very interesting.
I had assumed that they had one, but go on.
Everyone models themselves after the U.S. Isn't that how that works?
I don't want to answer that in this episode. That's a different episode.
All right, fair.
Sorry, anyway, we have the notion of the Leave It to Beaver life. And even that from, I think it was the Atlantic I was reading, is an aberration. Bi-generational living situation.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Parents and kids is a departure from the norm. For the longest time, up until about World War II, the multi-generation household was the standard, you know? And mm-hmm, that creates a whole different environment around this idea of, you know, wages and contributing to your own livelihood and, you know, supporting yourself. And we've kind of removed the cultural scenario, or we've changed the cultural landscape to remove these social support features that were organic. There was no, you know, market incentive or no government incentive or anything like that, not explicitly at least. And so now it is really about like, all right, you hit, you know, 18, go get a job or go to college. You hit 22, start working full time. You hit 25, get married, have a kid, you know, and that's not the norm. And I think we're going to see,
it's not the norm, but it's an expected progression almost. There's almost a stigma against not doing that.
Yeah, there is. And we were talking about people still living at home with their parents, like, back in the late 1800s, that's still kind of a thing. Right. You know, or look at Downton Abbey. You know, they have the entire family, like four generations in one house, you know, and that's an extreme example. But if you look at the past of how we've structured daily life, it was not nearly as individualistic as it has become.
Well, I think just being globally connected has really emphasized that, right? Yeah. We're not just sitting in our own hometowns working for the local factory or working on the local farm. I mean, my parents would love that. but it's one of those things where we're not, we went out in the world and we found something. I could work anywhere in the U.S. I could work anywhere in the world, realistically. I just don't like to travel outside borders.
any of us could work from anywhere in the world.
Absolutely. And yeah. I don't think that was really an option.
Any of the three of us, let's make that clear. We're not talking about everybody at large. Yeah. Just that happens to be our three careers.
Absolutely. And there are some that are very much hard-coded for, you know, you live in this town, you work in this town, that's where you are. Mm-hmm. But I feel like there's so many more opportunities now that allow you to say, oh, I'm gonna travel over here and work over here for a bit.
Or by and large, it's just easier.
Oh yeah,
To move.
Movement, staying connected even. Mm-hmm. It used to be a huge thing. If you moved away from home, well, how do you keep in touch with your family?
Yeah.
Nowadays, we FaceTime, we Zoom, we Facebook. I mean, there's social media is the thing, right? I know what my grandmother is doing 24/7. She's clipping her nails as of 25 minutes ago.
That's weird.
It's weird, but that's what she does. Don't shame my grandma.
You go, grandma. I'm not shaming your grandma. I'm shaming you for spying on your grandma.
She is the one that posts this stuff. She requested that I follow her. It's her fault. As a note to anyone who actually is listening, don't actually have a Facebook account. So not actually happening. Just a fun little piece of rhetoric.
Sophistry.
Tomato, tomato.
Where's the cowbell?
No, that's like tomato, onion.
Tomato, potato?
Yeah.
Nice. There we go.
Okay. Moving on.
Oh my gosh. But yeah, you're right. It's like it's so much easier for me to move away and kind of stay away. Like there was an idea for a long time in culture of like move away to the big city for a while, but then you eventually come back to start taking care of your family.
Wait, you go do your career. Right. And potentially you start your own family. Then you potentially move back.
Right.
As an option. Or maybe they move with you. That's also an option.
Which, yeah.
That was a very common occurrence. Nowadays it's more of single person out in the world. And I'd be really interested to see what marriage stats look like today comparatively to, you know, 20 years ago.
Oh, they're down.
They're hugely
people,
down.
Well, people are waiting longer.
Well, waiting longer or just not doing it.
Or just not getting married at all.
I mean, it's
civil partnerships.
Yeah that's a thing
too. Or even like there's, I think there's even fewer, like if you wrap those in with marriages, I think there's even fewer total than.
Probably.
Yeah. But yeah, the family dynamic, the extended family dynamic has certainly changed in the United States over the last 10, 20, 50 years. Whereas like opposed to traveling, you know, I vacationed in Vietnam recently and had the chance to talk with some locals, and they're like, if they live on their own, they live pretty close to where their folks are.
Oh, absolutely. It's conducive to do that. They have the jobs available. They have income sources available. You know, unfortunately for my small little town in the world of nowhere, I could have been a farmer. I don't know what kind of money that would have been. Like, I don't know if I could have lived on that. It was really a thing for my parents to get me out the door to say, hey, at some point you're going to have to support us.
Right.
And it's like, oh, well, let me go find a career that can do that because I don't think farming is going to be the thing, you know. And I don't know how that works with other people. Like coming from, I don't want to say large towns, but, you know, medium-sized areas, I feel like you have a lot more opportunity to stay in the local area to actually make money.
Nobody leaves Spokane permanently.
Okay, fair.
That's hauntingly accurate.
Yep.
Because we both left and came back.
Yep. Interesting. I knew, like, no matter how long I lived away from Spokane, my bones would somehow end up here.
Interesting. Yeah, so I left Kendrick and did not look back. Mm-hmm. I moved to Lewiston. I moved to Post Falls, and I'm now in Spokane Valley. I dabbled in going over to Redmond just because I was double housing at the time. That was a nightmare and a half. But I have no intention of ever going back to my hometown and actually working.
Right.
Now, I plan on retiring there because I think it's beautiful and I've got acres upon acres of stuff.
Are you going to be able to retire? Like psychologically?
Psychologically, no. Financially, yes. Psychologically, no. I've got to have my hand in like 12 different cookie jars at all times. Like, that's just not happening in any way, shape, or form. I'll always be working. And I feel like that's kind of a new thing too, is everyone feels like they need to continue working just as something to do. Whereas, again, the generational gap previously was, oh, well, we'll go to Florida and Boca and retire.
That was the narrative that was imposed, I guess, by media, but how often, like, all of my older relatives, they are constantly busy with things. Like,
that's true.
Now, it's not necessarily like career, job.
Oh, no, I wouldn't expect it to be career.
But often but it's like very productive stuff. Like, sure. my grandpa is still an airplane mechanic. Two of my grandmothers are like doing like Etsy level sort of stuff.
Nice.
Like they are actively producing. It's not just like, you know,
enterprising individuals.
Kind of, yeah. It's not just like the little old granny who's knitting on the beach shore or whatever.
Well, except that she's knitting and she's selling that.
Exactly. Right. She's knitting. And that's the thing is like my dad, I don't know if he still does, my dad was building furniture there for a while. And he amazing, amazing carpenter, really cool stuff. And he's selling it just in like the little podunk store in the middle of nowhere that gets like random people traveling by. And he's selling like it's going like hotcakes. It's amazing. Mm-hmm. People will drive to get to this place, awesome. Which is middle of nowhere. Really cool. I'm like, Dad, we need to put this on Etsy. And of course, the response to that was, what's Etsy? Never mind. Just can I sell your stuff for you? You know, you don't need to know the particulars. Right. Just know that I need to hand it to me and I'll ship it.
Give me things. I'll give you money.
And it was phenomenal. We actually sold a few items and I decided to mark them up even further than what he was. Cause I'm capitalist.
Sure.
And people, obviously if you're looking for a nice handmade wooden coffee table, you can spend $500 and not feel bad about it. He's selling these for $99 up at the store, by the way. People are getting a hell of a deal. He's doing it for cost.
Maybe asking you to hook me up sometime. I need some.
Absolutely, furniture. Absolutely. Hashtag not sponsored. My dad's not making coffee tables for us.
Russ's dad.
I know, right?
What if he was our only sponsor?
That'd be amazing.
I'd be okay awesome. With
it. We have to shout him out every episode.
That's terrifying in multiple ways.
I mean, my grandparents are the same. We mentioned my grandfather on the last episode. He's still working in his mid-80s.
My father is. So generational gap, it's kind of weird in my family. My parents are basically the age of most people's grandparents.
Right.
My father just turned 81 in December of last year, 2020. And he's still farming somehow. Like the boy farms. That's what he knows. That's what he does.
Yep.
He retired 20-some-odd years ago. Quote, retired. Because that's the only thing that actually changed was the fact that he suddenly started not filing taxes or something like that. I don't even know what it entailed. But he still works. He still gets up at Odark 30 is out and about. Now, he definitely delegates a lot more now. Like, he's more than happy to hand off to some of the other people, say, okay, you go deal with harvest. I'm going to drink a beer. You know, it's what he does. Right. And for him, that is retirement. He's still enjoying life. He's kind of doing what he's always done, but he enjoys it, as far as I can tell. I would hope that he enjoys it at this point, because I don't know what else he would do. But it's interesting that I feel like when we get older and, quote, retire, while we're not going to have a job that's career-based, we're probably going to pick up a job that is career-adjacent.
Yeah.
And probably continue doing what we do. But we also might take time to say, okay, I'm going to go flip burgers for 20 hours a week because I want to go, you know, redo my entire backyard this summer. You know, and it's going to be very, what do I feel like doing? Very leisurely, yeah. Right?
I hope I'm still. The ability to have some extra funny money.
Absolutely.
Nice.
I hope I'm still as academically curious when I'm that old, because I would love to work.
We have the free time. Right.
Yeah. I would love when I have the free time and the financial independence, just like, I'm going to go see what it's like to be a frack. Of course, by then we're all going to be replaced by the robots anyway.
Yes. So, yeah. That's the thing.
You know, we already are basically like,
well, I don't know if you guys have seen the meme, but it's the whole like time, money and energy, right? When you're young, you have the energy, you have the time, but you have no money.
Right.
When you're in your career path, you've got the money, you don't have the time. But you do have the energy because you're still young. When you get older, you don't have the energy, but you have the time and the money.
Right.
And you're always missing one of the three. And so the trick is balancing accordingly and doing it while you can.
So it's almost like we need to readdress the whole issue of the quote-unquote 40-hour work week.
Absolutely. And a lot of countries have done that. A lot of countries have said, well, what's funny, right? So Japan, the only reason I'm aware of this is my previous employer works in Japan. And so there was a mandate that people could not work more than 80 hours a week. This was a mandate by the government that came down because people were doing it.
Yeah.
And what's hilarious and tragic all at the same time is that we actually had people in the company that were annoyed by this new regulation. They were actually working more than 80 hours and they were pissed off that they can do it. Now, they weren't getting paid overtime.
No.
They were doing it as a salary.
And the interesting thing is like, you know, a lot of the times we think of the people who are working, you know, 40, 50, 60 hours a week. A lot of times we think of that as, you know, kids who are, I say kids, younger adults who are in school, have a family, and trying to support them all at the same time, where working those extra hours does gain you more money.
But, oh, absolutely.
Like that was the same sort of thing in my company too, is like we had a mandatory fun day where we went to the local.
That sounds like a cartoon.
Oh, it was awful. Oh,
we have morale days
on our stuff. Yeah, we went to like a local. Oh,
yeah, we do. We have those too.
Yeah, we went to some local, not theme park. I don't know what you would call it. They've got like an arcade.
We did the local theme park. We've got lovely Six Flags here, and we did Six Flags Day.
Oh, it wasn't even like the nice theme park here. No. But it, like, people were like, oh, I can't believe I have to go do this. Now, part of that is because like so many companies here, they're often, oh, you're giving us a day off. That just means that I have to work more.
The fun thing about that is previous employer moved all of our morale days to weekends.
Which I would hate.
So it's like, hey, why don't you come out on your Saturday and come join the company to go do something?
Nope.
We'll pay for it. Don't worry. It's like,
hard no.
If you want to do it during a weekday, I'll come join you guys because at least then I'm not working. But no, I'm sorry. I'm not going to give up my Saturday to go to a company function.
Not so much.
Well, that kind of goes back to what we were talking about working culture in this country in general, is it would be really fascinating to kind of spectrum places like Japan, or I'm guessing probably China or India, where they probably work an insane amount of hours, with places like Germany, Italy, France, United Kingdom. I was listening to a radio special about a year ago, this company in Sweden, I think they only worked 5.5 hours a day. Mm-hmm. Like their work day was that long. And they said, it's amazing because we are just as productive, but we're happier.
Yep.
Because, you know, when we're working, we don't have to worry about looking busy. We just, all right, this is what I have to do. I have this much time to do it. So, you know, socializing and, you know, time wasting goes away. And they haven't lost revenue. They haven't lost profit growth. Still very healthy as a business, but their people are much happier because they get more time off.
So I think it kind of pulls us into, and maybe wrapping up our topic of like the minimum wage. We have all of these preconceived notions, like raising the minimum wage in my circles was always billed as, well, you're just going to drive up inflation and you're going to like, then rents will go up. Then all these products will go up.
Well, that's because predominantly in your circles, no one's making minimum wage, right? They're making above that already.
Right? Depending. Being in a lot of, I said I was the religious fanatic at the beginning of this episode, but being in a lot of religious circles, specifically more conservative Christian circles, where not a lot of people were making at least substantially over the minimum wage.
Yeah, but they're making more than.
Yeah.
And I feel that's the general sentiment of the groups that are making more than minimum wage, is that it's just going to drive inflation. It's going to cause my services to go up. And it does. Sure. But
not as much as people make it out to be. Like there have been studies that showed that as the minimum wages went up, there was no correlation to inflation, and the cost of goods themselves went up by a tiny fraction. Well, that's not anywhere close to what we actually raised the minimum wage.
Oh, absolutely. That's the linchpin, is what's the percentage of inflation going to bump to?
Mm-hmm.
How many basis points is it going to bump if we bump minimum wage this much? I've never seen research on that.
Some of the articles that we looked over today, one of them said, and granted, this is one article of many, there are many differing views about this, but it was like 0.36% for every dollar, I think. I'd have to take a look at it again, but it was an incredibly small amount. And that's not talking just inflation. That's talking overall cost of living.
Sure.
The ironic thing is that, and maybe it's not ironic, it's just simple financial math, basically, is that when you give people money, they can spend it on discretionary items. And there was an article we were surveying, I guess, from Yahoo about Amazon saying, we're going to raise our minimum wage, basically so that we can stay alive, because now our people can buy more products, which is what Henry Ford did back in the 1900s.
If you pay your people, they can buy your products.
Yes.
He was an insane capitalist, by the way.
Oh, he was terrible in a lot of ways, but, you know, blind pig finds a truffle every now and then.
But I mean, like, you know, if Jeffy Bezos.
Jeffy B. You mean, and Lex Luthor?
Yeah. And Henry Ford and all of these other, like, these are the capitalist icons, right?
Who runs Walmart?
Huh?
Who runs Walmart?
The Walton family.
Yeah.
That's another one that was, they were in the news, I think, late 90s for basically underpaying their workers, but then offering them discounts to purchase at their own stores. Mm. So effectively, they were driving their own economy, which was very interesting.
Yeah.
I don't know if they were substantiated or not. But
that's at least...
Walmart's had a public change of heart.
Yeah,
and I say public very intentionally.
Yes. And that also brings to mind the whole, like, you know, mining towns where you get, you know, coupons to spend at the store, but it's not going to help you at all.
Sold
at least Walmart,
that's the company store.
Yeah. Yep. At least Walmart's theoretically not going to be that bad, but still.
Yeah.
But, you know, if these capitalist icons are thinking raising the minimum wage is a good idea for their own profits.
Yeah.
Like it's a selfish thing, but it
makes sense.
Works. It has historically worked.
It's going to, I mean, yes, Walmart, Amazon, Ford, Microsoft, probably not so much Microsoft because I don't think they have a lot of minimum wage employees. They can do that. It is the places, it is right. The small businesses, not to offend our resident small business owner, that are going to feel it the most. Like Amazon made Jeff Bezos during the pandemic added enough money to his net worth to give every Amazon employee a $105,000 raise and still have as much money before the pandemic.
Yep.
Like that's how much Jeff Bezos added to his net worth.
Crazy.
Yeah. Think about that.
And think about
how much money... He can afford to pay his employees $15 an hour.
Oh, yeah. And think how much of that money is not getting reinjected into the economy.
And that's the kicker, is that when you don't have... And I don't know why this doesn't get brought up more in the crossfire discussions that we see on TV and on media. Why doesn't it get brought up more to, again, kind of like taking a cold view of things, view people not as people, but wheels in the economic machine. And if the only use for that person you have is as a producer and all right, produce burgers, produce, you know, car washes, whatever, but not as a consumer, when you take away their tools that would make them an eligible consumer, who are you really hurting? You know, like, yeah, it may mean your shareholders get a little bit more return on their investment, or they get a little bit of a dividend bump. They're probably not going to spend that in their areas where your store exists. You know, you can't spend a 2% growth factor on your portfolio at Walmart. I mean, you could technically, but they're not going to.
No.
They have no need to. Right. You know, so when you take the tools away from people that make them active units and active contributors to an economy, you hamstring that economy.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's, you know, the counter argument to the minimum wage increase tends to center around, you know, the same arguments that people have about welfare. Well, it's just going to cause them to be lazy. So what if it improves the economy? I personally don't think it's going to cause people to be lazy. I think we've seen that already, especially with our generation. But
hopefully it'll increase the quality of life for people who are working in wage jobs.
And that's the thing. The returns you're going to see on this, the social and health returns you're going to see on this, I think far outweigh. Because, yes, you have burger flippers making – I can't believe I even just said that. It's the Scotch Duckin. Making $15 an hour, but – if that means that they can pay for a little more school or not take on as much debt to go to school or pay for their kid to have one more meal or a better meal or keep themselves healthier, having a healthy functioning populace is essential to having a strong economy.
Yep.
Absolutely.
And you can't have one without the other. You know, another thing to think about is that there are people who a minimum wage type job is probably what they're going to do, like people with special needs or disabilities, you know, maybe they can't, you know, like someone with Down syndrome, you know, I got an old shop teacher whose son has Down syndrome. He's not going to be, you know, a portfolio analyst or an engineer, but he can bus tables, you know, and great. He's being paid to do something. Well, and
he's participating in the economy.
Exactly. Right? He is an economic participant. And I think that's what's been missing for so long for these conversations, is that we're not seeing people as economic participants. Now, it is a little dehumanizing.
It is.
But it's at least dehumanizing in a productive way instead of this whole, like, just people are dumb and lazy sort of a thing.
Right. And economics, in my opinion, should never be emotional. Like, that should never be.
Go, you should
it is. Richard
Thaler.
Oh, yeah. It is, you know, to certain people, sure. But for the most part, I view economics as it really should be, which is numbers. It's users, it's vendors, it's consumers, it's the government, it's all the players together, and whether they're contributing or they're detracting.
How very Machiavelli of you.
Yeah, it's the thing.
I guess he's more of the government exists to perpetuate the government sort of a thing. But yeah.
Let's not get into Machiavelli tonight. I don't have enough scotch for that.
But yeah, it's, you know, it's a weird false dichotomy, I think, that has been perpetuated, and many of the my more left-leaning brethren and sistren would say, my left-leaning folk.
We said to go southern there for a second.
Yeah, a little
nothing
bit.
Wrong with that.
Would say it's, you know, it's a lie that's being perpetuated by the 1% or whatever, which it may very well be, but it's something that I think as a culture beginning to kind of shake that up again. And so we'll see. I think by and large, a raise to the minimum wage, how that happens, that's another question. But a raise to the minimum wage is going to be very good for our economy, for our country's economy, and probably for the world's economy, considering how much the United States props up the world economy. I don't think it's going to be a death sentence to as many businesses. I think there are some that are going to be sacrificed, and we must take that into account. Stop just assuming that everybody's going to flourish because of the minimum wage increase.
Absolutely.
Not everybody will, and you must account for that. If you care about people,
progress has a price.
Care about people,
progress has a price.
You must understand that.
Yeah.
So let us know what your thoughts are below in our comment section. If you're for the minimum wage increase, against it, or
you're one of those weirdos who thinks there shouldn't be a minimum wage at all. I mean, go live in China, I guess.
Careful, they might have one. I don't actually know.
I don't actually know what China. See, that's the thing we didn't talk about, is what if there was no minimum wage? Because there are countries on both sides of the economic spectrum.
True. Absolutely.
Like Switzerland doesn't have a minimum wage, but they have minimum wages based on vocational areas.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Another episode.
The economy of Switzerland?
The economy of the world.
Oh, God, that's a whole series.
Going to need to yank the Yakko's Song of the World.
Yes.
World Country's Song. But yeah, thank you, everybody, for listening. Please feel free to stop by our website, scotchandsocialism.com, to leave us a comment. We'd love to hear from you. Also,
like, subscribe.
Feel free to send us an email, scotchandsocialism@gmail.com. Find us on Instagram and Twitter as well. Hope you all have a good one.